Greetings, friends. This is Nicodemus Gunn welcoming you to Wait, What Are We Talking About? And today we've decided we're going to talk about board games and tabletop gaming. If you've seen the show Tabletop on YouTube with Will Wheaton. Yes.
Would you like to explain to our listeners really quick while we're not doing the Spike Lee show?
Okay. Yes, I should probably explain to our listeners. So, as eager listeners to last week's podcast will have noted, we said that we were going to do a Spike Lee show this week because we are pre-recording our show so that we can go on Thursday night to the wonderful Ron Robinson Theater run by the Central Arkansas Library System and watch the special showing of Spike Lee's Malcolm X, which is a favorite of at least a good number of the people on the table, if not all of us. And we discovered that despite the fact that we wanted to do a show about Spike Lee, we all like Spike Lee, we are not well-versed enough in Spike Lee's filmography that we feel we would do it justice in a podcast at this time. So we're going to take a hiatus on that topic.
We'll come back to it later.
I've assigned everybody homework. We all have to spend the rest of this week, especially Thursday night, watching Spike Lee films and taking notes, because I really want to get back to this topic next week. We all need to watch some more and confer on some things.
Absolutely.
We discovered that we were very passionate about certain of his films, that overall there were major gaps in our knowledge of his filmography. So we're gonna come back to Spike Lee. Meanwhile, you can listen to us talk about games while we're out watching Spike Lee. So, with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Nicodemus. You are the game master.
Yeah, as your faithful dungeon master. Although today we are not talking about Dungeons and Dragons, we are talking about board games. Everything from chess and checkers. Yes, even the dreaded Monopoly, that destroyer of friendships and families. All the way up to the really complicated Euro games, the stuff that your friend pulls out and they go and you look at and you go, "How do I learn this?"
Yeah, the one that takes 3 years of painting miniature figures before you actually play the game.
Hey.
I'm working on one of those right now.
World of Warcraft people. Not World of Warcraft. Warhammer.
Warhammer.
Brent, I'm very sorry to all you geeks out there.
I played Warhammer briefly in the 80s, and I discovered I am not rich enough to play Warhammer.
I read part of a Warhammer novel once. I'm fascinated by the fact that there is like this whole thing. There's like whole lines of novels based on games. That fascinates me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I digress.
First, let's start off with a brief question. You know, do y'all have a favorite board game?
Wow.
Okay, so I will start this off because I'm like the mid-level experienced board gamer here. My gentleman is actually a super board gamer, and I travel with at least 3 giant totes full of esoteric board games in my trunk no matter where I'm at. Because he always tells me you never know when it's going to be a good time for a game.
Absolutely.
And you also never know what game is going to appeal to someone to get them into board gaming. Like, it's like this really wholesome activity he got me into, and I kind of feel embarrassed. Like, I'm totally losing street cred here, but it's really nice to hang out at, you know, a friend's house or at our house and, you know, play a board game that might last 4 hours, but, you know, we're drinking and talking and having fun. And I will say that it's not my favorite one ever, but my most memorable board game is probably Takenoko, because that's the first board game that I played, and I'm a little ADD, guys, so it takes me a minute to get things sometimes. But Takenoko is the first board game that I played that I understood and really enjoyed playing. Plus, it's really, really cute. It's got panda bears in it. Oh, my God. And then, of course, you know, it's being the kind of board game it is. It's got expansion packs, which we now have the Chibis expansion pack where the panda bears actually get together, and then they make baby panda bears, and they're all anime, chibi, cute, and cute. And I love that game because it's easy enough to really appeal to all ages. It's got enough difficulty that it's a decent board game to play, but it's also cute. So, like, kids can play it, adults can play it. There's, I don't know, like, you're not, like, battling anything. You're just trying to, you know, build things and irrigate your land and make sure the panda bear gets enough bamboo stalks built up and stuff. And I've always loved that one because that's the first one that appealed to me. And it's the one that when we play with people who've never played board games before, I always suggest because, again, it's cute, easy enough, but with just enough difficulty to make it worth playing.
See, I'm an old fart, at least compared to you guys. And no, I age like whiskey, so that's good. But I'm an old fart. And I am not nearly as deep into the board game culture as you guys are. So I'm more old school on it. Like, you know, for me, Monopoly, you know, that was a fun game. It was long. It was involving. I lost every goddamn time because I'm not good with money. So that's probably a life lesson in that. But, you know, I think of stuff like that Monopoly. God, it's been a while, but I played Life, you know. I keep thinking of games I like, and I'm like, I like Cards Against Humanity, but that's not a board game, so that doesn't qualify.
No, no. Cards Against Humanity.
Tabletop. We're saying tabletop. Yeah, tabletop. Okay. Well, in that case, Cards Against Humanity is my favorite.
Cards Against Humanity is one of those games that is both really, really fun and really, really troubling at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes some of the things that come out in that game, you really wish. Yeah.
Is it troubling that the game doesn't trouble me?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, cause it doesn't trouble me. I own a massive collection. It's not the game that troubles me. It's some of what you learn playing the
game. It's called learning uncomfortable psychological facts about your friends.
Yes, very uncomfortable.
Right. Unless you're talking about me, in which case you already know I'm a depraved son of a bitch.
Now, I will also say this, because going back to the game you mentioned earlier, Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually kind of a controversial game in the board gaming community. There are board gamers who refuse to play Monopoly because of how...
Because it's capitalist?
Well, no, because of how cutthroat it is. I mean, like, literally, they talk about how it just, like, It's a game. It is a game, but some people take their games very seriously.
Uno was cutthroat. You never saw the Upjohn clan playing Uno, man. We'd slap a draw four on grandma, and we thought it was fucking funny. And then a quiet little grandma later would just quietly set a draw four down when it was going the other direction, and just fuck you, too. You
well,
know?
And I will tell our listeners, and you know, we ought to have an email. Do we have an email?
No, but we need to set one up.
I'm going to make up an email right now, and we will set it up after this show.
Well, actually, I know there's a DeviantLegion at Gmail, but I think we need to set up an email for this show specifically.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Well, let's come up with a good Gmail account. What should our Gmail account be?
I mean, it's long. We just call it. Wait, what are we talking about at gmail.com?
I think that's too long.
Talking about.
Let's see.
Wait.
no, wait.
Which is probably
guys,
used.
We'll have to get back to you next week.
Yeah, we'll get back to you on that.
Because
yeah.
We have to check and see if it's...
Yeah. We're going to come up with an email address, and when we post this episode, we will post a link to our email address in the episode information. Huh? Yeah. But yeah. We're gonna post a link to our email that we're going to create in the episode information. Email us and tell us, you know, what are your thoughts on these games? We'd love to hear from you. Maybe at some point you could even become a guest on the show later if you're really, really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Just going back to that Monopoly, there are a lot of gamers that's a verboten subject for various reasons. I've never quite understood it. I play Monopoly. I own a copy of Monopoly. But... It's not well regarded among really serious tabletop gamers.
Pissy about.
I can understand this because I grew up with a really competitive, like game wise family. They actually not necessarily game wise, but crosswords. My father, my grandmother, and my aunt all competed on the crosswords every week to see who could get the Sunday Times crossword done. And that led to a much more competitive gaming nature, turning into things like Scrabble, which I learned to play at an early age because my mother's side of the family was also very competitive with games like that. And like I learned to be competitive at gaming by playing the old school games, Monopoly, Life, Scrabble, doing the crosswords and things like that. It wasn't until, you know, my later years, you know, in my late 20s and early 30s, that I started learning that there were games that weren't just Monopoly and Life and you know, Twister, the stuff that you get off the store at Walmart every day. I started learning that there was, like, a whole
Twister
legion of crazy board games that were actually interesting and fun. And one of those fun, interesting games, another one of the first games I ever played and really loved because it was hilarious, Munchkin.
Munchkin is more fun than it has any right to be. Munchkin is kind of a meta game because the whole point of Munchkin is it's making fun of what D&D players call Munchkin players. So it's a game about a bunch of people playing Dungeons & Dragons and the really cheesy characters they make up and the stupid little powers they get.
Okay, would you like to explain what a Munchkin player is for those of us that are not familiar with the term?
A Munchkin player, for somebody who's familiar with Monopoly, a Munchkin player is somebody who takes so much glee in the fact that he's put hotels on both Boardwalk and Park Place.
Oh, okay.
And specifically is like takes glee every time you draw the card that sends you to Boardwalk. Or it's the power gamer is probably another really familiar way to put it.
Well, one of the best things about Munchkin is you don't have to love the original game to love Munchkin. Because expansions they make on this thing, I can't even describe. I personally have an Axe Cop expansion for Munchkin.
Yep. There's Axe Cop Munchkin.
Like a weirdly...
There's X-Men Munchkin.
I mean, there's Shakespeare Munchkin, there's Zombie Munchkin, there's
Do they have Chaucer Munchkin? That'd be pretty cool.
I don't think there's a Chaucer Munchkin
I
yet.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
There should be, and it should be in Middle English.
Well, and that's what's funny, is like all the cards are like written in crazy, funny little ways, and you get these insane powers,
And you win the game when you get to level 10.
There's a card game. It's a similar in idea to Cards Against Humanity, and I know about it because she who will not be named is a Deadpool fan, mm-hmm. And she who will not be named has this game, and I played it with her back when we still associated. And it's basically that each card is a picture of Deadpool in some ridiculous situation. You have to come up with some kind of
I've seen that
caption.
Game.
And of course, you find out really quick if you're playing with like a friend of yours and a couple of teenagers, you'll find out real quick the level of potty humor you're dealing with kids on that.
Yeah, actually, as much as I love Cards Against Humanity, there is a superior game to Cards Against Humanity.
Really?
Now. There's one if you're familiar with the web cartoon Cyanide and Happiness, I'll give them a little shout out.
Shout out, dude!
I like the
but,
name.
Love
but,
them.
But they do a card game called Joking Hazard, and all it is. Little one-frame panels of the cartoon with little captions.
So it's a caption the cartoon kind of
thing. Well, no. It's got some of them have captions, some of them don't. But they're generally the two main characters are these two little stick figure men. There's Blue and there's Green,
mm-hmm.
And they have interactions. And what you do is you draw three or four of those cards, and you've got a hand of them, and you have to make up the. Like generally, what will happen is the guy who's the judge that round will draw a card at random, puts that down. He puts one down from his hand, and then you have to finish the cartoon. And the funniest and some of these panels live up to the Cyanide and Happiness logo. Right. I mean, there are some really really wrong stuff, but it is beautiful because of how simple it is, and it's very visual and very amusing.
I've seen that game at Target, and it's something that I've been wanting to get because
I will bring it over.
Okay, well, you'll have to show the gentleman because we need more games at the house that, like, I guess, like the lower echelon gamers can play, like me. Like, I get too ADD to play Whitechapel. No, okay.
Listeners can't see me flipping off Phoebe right now.
And I was just, like, so confused the entire freaking time. And I tried, but again...
I love the fact also that they have expansions for the game. There's one expansion called Toking Hazard, you can imagine. And then there are two general expansions. They're just called deck enhancements.
Nice. Well, and that's what I love is a wow. lot of games, like, you get these expansions, and they actually make the game even more fun, which, you know, when you first play it, you're like, is this even possible? Well, oh, my God, mind blown. Psh, expansion.
Tons of unofficial expansions for Cards Against Humanity, stuff that plays with Cards Against Humanity. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a Doctor Who expansion.
I love the official expansions. I actually, the only Cards Against Humanity card I have right now is the bigger, blacker box special edition card that you had to cut out of the cover.
But you don't actually
it.
Have the game itself, so you have this useless expansion pack
I
right
don't.
Now.
I don't. It's fucking hilarious. Someone gave me a Cards Against Humanity actual like game deck box, and they were like, you need to go ahead and buy the game. And I was like, okay, I will, but... How do you randomly have a Cards Against Humanity box? And,
yeah, you know. It's the same reason that I do, because I got the bigger, blacker box, and I put all my cards in it.
That's it. That makes so much sense. Okay, so I've finally gotten to the point that I've been buying, like, small craft boxes, like the divided craft boxes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for myself, I have a fishing tote, like one of those old school, has so many compartments, you know, both sides. And that's what I've been purchasing to store all of the game pieces in.
Well, and you know, that's actually a big thing. I belong to a website called Board Game Geek. Those of you who know what it is know what it is. Mm-hmm. BoardGameGeek.com. It's really cool. But there's an entire DIY community on there. I've got access to a laser cutter, so I've done like custom laser cut tokens for some of my games and stuff. And there, that's a big thing of like, you know, because when you get these board games with like 15 expansions, how do I store all of it? And they'll do like custom foam cutout boxes and card boxes and you know, custom tokens and all kinds of stuff. It's actually
like a whole cottage industry right there.
It really is. There really is a whole cottage industry, both of people sharing the DIY plans and then also people who will just make those things and sell them on Etsy or something.
And storage is kind of a cunt for these things anyway, because no two games have the same size or shape box.
There are a few standard sizes, but yeah in general.
There's a few standard sizes. Like Catan
Don't step
is
on my
kind
joy.
Of a standard size. And by the way, this is how competitive my family on my father's side got over games. I did not know this for years because we're not always in the best contact with each other. You know, it's not always contentious, but it's, you know, not smelling roses either. I did not find out until, you know, the past few years, because of my gentleman, that my family gathers every single Sunday and plays a massive round of Catan with each other. And they've been doing this for years.
I love that game.
To the point that my uncle's birthday last year was a Catan-themed birthday party where they actually went and found these little hexagon trays and they glued them together to make multi-hexagonal divided plates.
Is this why your man likes geometric shapes?
Oh, he's always loved geometric shapes.
This
that's
is why
he loves Catan is because hexagons are my man's favorite.
Yeah,
thing
I knew. I knew he liked hexagons. I never, for some reason, I was never curious enough to ask why. I just knew he liked hexagons.
Well, and
a
until
lot of games were on hexes.
Until my and God bless it. Until the Silver Surfer, my van, died about a month ago. There was a Catan bumper sticker on it. Like, he loves this game, and so now, because of his love for weird hexagons and games, I've actually gotten closer to my family in the past few years because they really like him to come over and play with them.
Wouldn't it be weird if, like, your family got together every Sunday to play a round of Chris Catan?
I mean, my family's kind of weird. That was probably going on downstairs with my cousin. Like, she's probably watching some Chris Catan movies or something.
I'll never scrub that image out of my fucking brain.
Well, now this actually does bring up an interesting point, though, because, you know, honestly, there are people, and some of them family and some of them not, who I play games with, and it really is kind of a bonding thing. I mean, there is a real community aspect to this. It's one of the few things where you're kind of required to be in the same room with people, because nowadays a lot of people, I know people who won't take a phone call, who, like, text me. You know, and so
that's because some of us have phone anxiety, dude.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying though that this is one of the rare instances of an activity that is both popular now and at the same time requires that sort of immediate physical presence of people. And I'm wondering if what that says about us.
I have a great example of that too, because not only am I getting along with a family that I've, like I said, not always had great feelings about in the past. They're getting along with, you know, my extended family, you know, my gentlemen and my children because of the love of gaming. And trust me, folks, if you knew anything about my family, you would know that they are the least likely people you would expect that would know anything about a weird board game like Catan. And so it was like a jaw-dropping shocker for me when I found this out. And I was like, well, I just happen to be with someone who is also as obsessed with this game as you guys are. And so, yeah, I've gotten closer with my family. And the other interesting example is I have a child from a previous relationship. She's 9 years old and amazing and wonderful. I love my girl. But one of the times that I have gotten along the best with her father, my ex, which was definitely a contentious relationship, is when she wanted to go to a Pokemon tournament. She had learned how to play Pokemon cards, and he came with us. And it was me and my gentleman and my daughter and her father, and we all sat there for many hours, actually went out to dinner later and had a great time together, but all because of tabletop gaming, just the air of brotherliness, you know, camaraderie, really.
So basically what you're saying then is that tabletop games is kind of like marijuana. It brings people together to hang out that might not otherwise.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, exactly.
Games are like THC.
it is true that, I mean, there are people who I would never have met had it not been for, I'm going to plug one of our local game shops, Game Goblins. Is a really great place, and once a week they
That's
have.
Where she went to the tournament.
Yeah, this will tell you the kind of crowd. The game shops are not what you think. They sell beer there once a week on Saturday nights. They have adult game night. People come out, they sit around, they have an adult beverage, and they play games.
I may have to partake of that one night. You know, I'm not the biggest gamer. I mean, that sounds like fun.
It's a fun time, and
I'm a weirdo. I'm sure I'd be around a bunch of other fellow weirdos doing this.
Yeah, we'll put a link
probably
to that.
Some normies too.
We'll put a link to Game Goblins in the description on this podcast too.
We absolutely should, because the other cool thing about, you know, the game shops around here. I'm going to go ahead and give a shout out to Imagine, because that's, you know, on
They're
my
also
end
really
of the,
good.
The
we
spectrum.
Can put a link for them, yeah.
Well, have you been to their new shop since they
yes,
moved?
Yes, I have. I've been there a couple times. I don't get out there as much because that's in North Little Rock. It's a little further away from where I live.
See, but, Imagine yeah. is closer to me. Game Goblins is closer to Nicodemus. And Christoph is just, you know, wherever he is between the two of
I'm
us.
I'm a nomad
so,
right now.
But I love these places. There's also the game store in Jacksonville.
Yeah, they are really good. I've been there a couple times. It's been about a year, but yeah, they're real good.
And Mizewell and Conway, since we're prop and game shops right now, I have to say.
Absolutely.
Mizewell is
Props
amazing.
To all
they
of them.
Have the best scratch and dent section I've ever seen in my life.
Although Mizewell has changed over hands, they're now the Batcave. Yeah.
If I walk into a game shop, I'm going to be distracted by all the like the Gundam models and stuff like that.
There are a few.
That's my little. That's my little. If I get in a hobby mode, I spent like a year just like building the shit out of models, like Legos and Gundams.
Well,
you know,
that's what's
if you've
cool
got
about.
The money, Warhammer is probably your game. Honestly,
really,
yeah. They're all about the little model armies. I used to love. I paid that a little bit in the 80s.
There's a difference between miniatures and an actual model that you construct.
No, they are.
Okay.
Yeah, they're. Okay.
But they're
the
not
cool
robots.
Thing about all of our game stores out
Some
here,
of them are.
At least in the local area, like our locally run game stops and not game stops, like not that place. I'm sorry. No props for those guys.
Game stores.
Our game
there
stores.
We go.
Shops is that you can go in. You don't have to spend any money.
Gaming proprietors.
They all have giant racks and racks and racks of games in a back room. Where you can go sit at a table. Hey,
Rachel, their eyes are up here. You're not supposed to look at their racks.
I know, but I can't help myself. But
they do have great racks.
is they have racks and racks of games that you can go try out for free if you're not like a, you know, somebody who's just completely affluent and can afford every game you want. Like, you can go try one out before you spend $70 or $80 to buy something. That
some of those games are an investment.
I will tell you, that's one thing. You be careful when you start playing games because it. I have this maybe says something about me. I've organized my game collection. I have, if you don't count expansions, somewhere well north of 100 games sitting on my shelf at the house.
I'm pretty sure we do, too. I mean, you guys have both
seen... My movie collection is also pretty...
You both have seen his collection. Now, my movie collection is what really takes over the house. Like, that... Oh, good Lord, guys. We'll get onto that one day, but...
Mine would if I hadn't got OCD and taken them out of their cases and put them all in paper sleeves to make it more compact.
Mm.
Try moving a lot, man. You will seriously minimize your shit.
Oh, yeah.
Truth. But... That's what's great about these board games is you can find something that appeals to anyone. That's what my guy always says is you can find a game that anybody will like to play. You just have to find the right one. And that's why we have so many is because he's so passionate about it that he wants everybody to be able to play a board game with him at least once.
And he wants to make sure he has one that everybody might enjoy.
Exactly.
I will give you an example because, Christoph, you said you have not played as many games. Christoph, no. What is, I guess, your favorite, I'm trying to think of a good sort of category of thing.
Yeah.
What are you a big fan of? What is, like, your passion?
Okay, pop culturally or just generally? Just
pick one.
Okay, well, I mean, for me, you're going to be talking about film.
Oh, well,
arts generally, film, music, literature.
Well, and there's a whole host of games that would fit that. Trivia games, obviously, that's the low-hanging fruit.
I love trivia.
That's the low-hanging fruit. But
that's what his favorite thing is as far as a competitive nature, he really likes trivia. Actually, he's only been with me once, but I just recently, a few months ago, joined a trivia team. At the local bar, going to go ahead and give another shout out
today.
Games
of knowledge, I guess, would be something down my alley.
Spectators, Grill and Pub in North Little Rock, love you guys. Hogs on the Bar, that's our trivia team. And we're doing very well in the semifinals this year. So
Balderdash, that's a game I like.
That's a great one. That very much fits into
this. You're seeing the theme of stuff I like.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Balderdash, for those of you who don't know, that's where... Basically, some unusual word would put out there, and you have to. Everyone's going to write a fake definition, and the goal is to pick the real definition out of the fake definitions. And part of the skill is being good enough to write a convincing fake definition, and then being smart enough to pick the real one out of all the fakes.
Yeah, that's a there's a whole class of games like that.
Board games are my fave.
There's an NPR show that has a few games like that.
Wait, don't tell me.
Yeah, they have games like that. Fantastic
and
show, by the way.
I'll tell you, shows like Wait, Don't Tell Me. There's another one called Ask Me Another.
Yes.
That's a really good show. But I think to an extent, some of those shows. Are sort of the pop culture reflecting back on some of the themes that we're picking up. They're bringing up things like tabletop.
They've done that exact thing of like what's the real definition of this strange word?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, I've heard them do that on NPR.
We'll see. And in the past, last year, as everybody may or may not know, my father moved into the house with us, and I take care of him now. Yay, full time job that is. But one of his favorite things to do now that he's retired is he watches Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy every weekday morning. I mean, to the point that it's a thing. Like, I have to set alarms to make sure that he's awake so that he wakes up for Jeopardy. And I've always loved trivia and word puzzles. It's Price is Right in Jeopardy in the morning. I'm sorry. Wheel of Fortune is at night, but he doesn't watch that one.
No, my mother watches that religiously.
I should have been on Wheel of Fortune a long time ago. We won't.
I like Family Feud, and there's a tabletop version of Family
there
Feud.
There is a tabletop version of Family Feud. Now, I'm kind of curious. I know that Phoebe is very familiar with this. Have you played any of what they call Euro games?
No, I guess not.
These are games like Catan. There's a few others where essentially what you've got is you've got little markers marking your people, and you're moving them around. I guess Life is a really, really primitive version of this sort of concept. Those are actually getting really popular nowadays.
Are these strategy games, or are these more like simulating life?
Well, there can be a little of both, but they tend to be strategy games that are about resource management. You know,
Like it's sort of like a tabletop version of some of those farming games.
Very much like that.
Civilization, things like that.
Yeah, Civilization. There's actually a board game version of Civilization, and there's a couple of versions of similar games. One of my favorites, Seven Wonders, which I know you've played Seven Wonders, haven't you? Mm-mm. Seven Wonders is really great. You take on the role of one ancient civilization, you know, the Egyptians, Babylonians, whatever, and you go through three different rounds of cards where you're trying to build the biggest civilization.
You can end up with some interesting alternate history scenarios.
Oh, yeah, you very much do. You end up where the Greeks build the pyramids and the Egyptians have the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, you know.
Well, in an America where Trump never got elected, maybe.
Well, we can only hope.
I will say this, speaking of that,
This is another instance where I think it was really cool the way board games impacted modern pop culture. Mm-hmm. First off, Cards Against Humanity constantly is poking fun at people. They'll take their money and spend it on. Recently, they bought a large parcel of land in Texas specifically to keep people from building a wall there.
Really?
Yes. They own a large section of the border now.
Now I wish I was rich so I could buy a bunch of borderland.
Yeah. Now there's another company though. I don't remember the name of it, and maybe we can post it sometime later. There's a game called Secret Hitler, and if you're familiar, it's what they call a social interaction game or a social deduction game. And the whole point is you're all politicians in a government.
Kind of like One Night Ultimate Werewolf.
Similar. I've played that game. It's very similar. The thing is you're constantly voting on different laws, some of which favor fascism and some of them don't. Secretly, some of the players are fascists, and one of them is secretly Hitler.
That's pretty cool.
And you're trying to do your best to prevent Hitler from becoming
the classic slumber party games based on a similar idea to that.
The Resistance, that's another one.
The funny thing about this is, the month after the 2016 election, the company that makes the game Secret Hitler sent one copy of that game to every representative and every senator in the entire United States. They also, at the same time, published a Secret Trump expansion. It was kind of beautiful. Sorry for injecting a little politics there. I'm sure some of the people who listen to our...
I love that story.
I'm the one that made the Trump joke.
I was familiar with it, and it is glorious to hear it again. I have just such a huge smile on my face right now. Might also be because I'm eating hot peanuts in the interim, so...
How dare you?
Yeah, for that matter, there's got to be some tabletop games out there based on the Trump thing now, because there's been so much product out there, both anti and pro Trump.
I hate to say this. There was, at one time, at least one and probably more than one Trump-branded board game.
And there's probably also games out there that are making fun of him too.
There's so much Trump stuff out there now. There are multiple Cards Against Humanity Trump cards. I've seen them in some of the expansions. There's an entire Trump expansion, as a matter of fact. There was also an Obama expansion. To be perfectly fair,
it'd be one of those. I had some friends that trot that game out with, and some friends not to. You know,
yeah, absolutely. That's one of those games where you have to be very comfortable with the people you're playing with, because.
Frankly, shit's going to get said.
And some of it's really disturbing. There's a whole class of people who have a very strong reaction against Cards Against Humanity because they think it trivializes some of what it's making fun of.
I'm all into gallows humor. I understand that. I mean, that's how we cope, is we find the humor even in harsh shit, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone has to find their own comfort zone.
It's a valid criticism, but at the same time, it's you have to see, you know, are you comfortable confronting that material, essentially.
Right.
Well, see, and with you two guys in here, I would have no problem playing Cards Against Humanity. But
get my mom into it, be different.
Yeah. My mom and stepdad are amazing people. They're super cool and awesome. I don't think that's something that I would want to play with them.
Dude, I would totally play Cards Against Humanity with your folks.
You think so?
Yeah, I would. They're not my folks.
What about Daddy-O? Would you play with him, too?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and your family's pretty chill. You don't come from the fundamentalist background that I come from.
Well, that's true. I do kind of
Church of Christ, COC, woot woot.
Now, to take it back really old school, I'm just curious, how familiar are we with chess?
I've tried to learn to play.
You're
it.
You're gonna have to use your words.
I like chess. I like. That's right. You can't see me raising my hand. I raise my hand.
I tried to learn how to play it, and I got bored, and I had this glass chess set.
How do you get bored? Checkers is boring. Chess is interesting. Checkers is fucking boring.
I like Pente.
I've never played that. I don't know.
Pente?
Chess is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Chess is also a really good rock opera written by the two guys from ABBA as well. Yeah. One Night in Bangkok.
Chess is one of the more ancient games as well.
Classic strategy game. I love chess. I'm not good at it. Here's the great thing about chess. It's one of those games that it doesn't matter if you suck at it. As long as the person you're playing sucks at about the same skill level, it can be a really good game. That's one of those, find someone that's on your skill level if you want to have a good long match. Or if you want to learn, find somebody better than you and get your ass beaten.
I was about to say, there's a certain joy in seeing somebody pull off a really elegant move and suddenly having your brain go, oh, that's where I made the mistake.
I love those, checkmate in three moves you can do on people until they realize, oh, I just moved that pawn first and you can't do that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like, I cornered your bitch, game over, next. And then you get into the whole munchkin playing again.
Which is frankly a problem in not just games, frankly, but in a
That's called
of
being
games.
A sore winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there can be a certain amount of vicious joy. As I say, we always thought it was funny when Grandma got a draw four. But, you know, there's the tone. You got to find that magic line where you're not crossing over into just, you know, ruthless tyranny.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to be having fun when you're playing.
But
you have to be adult enough to not rub it in somebody's face when you can tell they're not having a good time.
Here's what I'm going to say, and this is just from somebody who's been in this situation. One of the most important things that serious gamers need to understand is just because somebody's not taking the game as seriously as you are doesn't mean they're not trying to play and have fun.
Right.
Well, like, I don't go to game night with a certain group of friends anymore because I feel bad. Like, they take it really seriously.
Yeah, there's some munching in that game. You've told me about that game.
And you know, some of the gamers took it way more seriously than me. So, like, if I set out for a game and, like, colored in a coloring book or played, you know, music or something, they got a little offended because I wasn't being as serious about the gaming as them. And it just kind of made it uncomfortable. So I don't go there anymore. And I think that's something that a lot of people need to understand is, just because I don't take it, like, super hardcore serious, it's not, like, my entire life and everything and all that I love doing, doesn't mean that I don't want to enjoy it and play with you guys and have fun.
Well, and that introduces another topic, and something that doesn't just exist here. It exists in really a lot of geek culture and a lot of culture in general, and that's gatekeeping. You get people who, you know, well, they can't be a comic book fan. They're a girl, or they can't be a gamer because they're oftentimes let's call a spade a spade. Oftentimes it's men talking about women.
It is. And there's a lot of that.
The whole Gamergate bullshit.
Which the stupid thing about that is it actually really okay. The perceptions these Gamergate people have are so skewed because there are so many women in gaming. Huge amounts of women gaming. It is just as much a girl's thing as a guy's thing. So this whole Gamergate thing, that's really based on misperception. If they think gaming is a male thing, they're out of their fucking minds.
Completely. But what I'm saying is that
geeky girls are fucking hot.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
But this gets back to the same topic we were talking about, which is, you know, I'm gonna direct this at Phoebe because she's sort of, well, I think I could also direct it at Christoph. Christoph is definitely an outsider, you know, definitely somebody who is not following the cultural mainstream. Nope. How have you felt about the way people gatekeep? We're talking specifically about games here, but I mean, how has that impacted you, and why do you think people do that?
I think one of the reasons that most people in the world act out is because they feel like they are lacking control. And I've noticed this a lot, you know, in my personal life and my home life and things, is things get hairy with, you know, between the personalities when things start going wrong and nobody can control what happened. And honestly, I feel like the gatekeeping comes from a place of, well, this is something that I know very deeply and intrinsically. I've spent my entire life doing it. I control this. I don't want to share this with someone else. And that's where, I don't know. I'm not making myself very clear, I guess.
No, I get what you're saying. Definitely.
And it comes from a place of, you know, when you have control over something, you have power. And that's what most small minds crave is power. So I really think that's where a lot of it comes from is you've got something to hold over somebody else, and it makes you feel like the bigger, taller, you know, better person.
It's human ego. It's that simple. This is why we humans do most of the fucked up things we do is because of ego.
Exactly.
And to answer your question, if you listeners could see me, you would know goddamn well how I feel about gatekeeping, because gatekeeping exists in lots of cultures, for example, in clothes. Right now I'm wearing a cowboy hat covered in glitter, eye makeup, lipstick, a pink sport coat. Fuck gatekeeping. I like breaking stereotypes. I like pushing the envelope, because I've always been like one of these, well, why does it have to be that way?
And he looks fabulous, by the way.
I do look
fabulous.
I'm the hottest bitch in the room. Absolutely. No offense, Phoebe, but I'm the hottest bitch in the room right now.
I'm wearing a Jughead hat. I'm way hotter.
Please.
I accidentally wore an appropriate T-shirt. Mine says level up.
We should make Nicodemus uncomfortable and ask him to pick which one of us is hotter. I believe at that point he would nope out.
No. I think what I would say is being the confident modern man, I would say that, Christoph, you're definitely hotter right now, but I'm more attracted to Phoebe because
I understand that.
That's my thing.
I understand that. I'm thoroughly heterosexual. I'm just gender
it's
fluid
boobs.
As fuck. That's all. But yeah, I hate gatekeeping. I hate it. Like, why? What is the arbitrary thing? I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I liked playing with dolls, you know, and I'm just always kind of like that. Fuck these standards. I mean, fine, if most people are that way, that's fine. But why can't I buy pink ribbon cigars for a boy being born, or vice versa? In fact, actually, the pink and blue thing used to be reversed.
It was reversed.
It's fairly recent that they changed that.
Well, and there's actually, we're getting completely off topic here, but there's
it's relevant.
No, there's an entire movement right now of people who are saying they don't want to do like gender reveal parties anymore. Because
because it's still reinforcing the gender
because
identity.
It's still reinforcing, and we don't know what that person's gender is going to be when they grow up. We just know what they've got between their legs,
and that which is sex, and sex and gender are two different things.
Now on that topic, these two can both confirm for me that I have a lovely younger daughter, and when I had my baby, and people insisted on a baby shower. Hate baby showers. I told him, I was like, I need gender neutral things. Like, I know what kind of baby I'm supposed to have, but I still need gender neutral stuff because, you know, frankly, like, it's easier that way. And I let, well, now that she's, you know, almost 2 years old, I let her pick what she wants to wear for the most part. I mean, she's got, you know, Ninja Turtle outfits that I've gotten from the boys section, you know. Yeah. Sweatshirts and pants from the boys section. She's got stuff from the girls section. It doesn't matter. Like, just put clothes on your child.
Yeah, they used to dress boys in dresses. That used to be boys that were dressed in lace and dresses and things like that. You know, boys used to like to look pretty, and some of us still do.
Well, exactly.
But I think it's interesting because, I mean, when I was growing up, I'm going to do the, you know, when in my day thing. In my day, being a geek was not popular. Geek culture has become cool now. You know, back in the day, you were a complete
Absolutely.
Outsider. So I find it interesting and ironic that the outsiders, now that they're insiders, they're becoming the fucking the same, the normie shit. They're becoming the oppressives. They're doing the same thing. And it makes me think of the movie Heathers, you know. And also, going back further than that, a movie, I swear to God, the people that wrote Heathers had to have seen, Massacre at Central High, where the whole concept is you have the oppressed nerd class or the lower class. Well, when they get in control, they end up being the same assholes.
Well, I mean,
does it really depend? It's the power corrupts.
It even goes back to Animal Farm, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's the same thing. It's essentially the same story all over. You know, power corrupts.
Right. And whoever's on top enjoys that power, and whoever's on top is threatened when the power structure goes to change. That's why even, for example, non-toxic males sometimes have a knee-jerk reaction against the way things are going, because the white male paradigm is slowly losing its footing, and that is scary. Even if you are a white male, but you're not trying to abuse it. Like, I'm a white male, but I'm not one of the toxics. But it's still scary when you realize, well, things are changing. You're no longer, you know, what happens when somebody else is in control? What if they want to be a dick?
And that is that, to bring it back full circle here, that is actually something that you learn about people when you play board games with them.
Personality's got to come out in something like that.
And playing board games is somehow one of the most raw personality-wise experiences you can have with somebody ever. I mean, because board games will cause breakdowns in just regular everyday people, but it's that competitive edge, that need to control and that need to have power. And that's what I think is interesting about board games, is I've learned a lot about people by playing different board games with them.
Well, and this is a very ego-fueling game or thing, because, I mean, it's about winning.
And I care if I lose. Like, I have zero – I give absolutely zero fucks if I lose. I don't care. Like, I'm not that competitive. Now,
you find out who does care.
I do like to win, and I'm not going to say that it isn't a great feeling, but you will definitely find out who the assholes are when you play games with somebody.
Well, and that brings me to another topic, and this is a thing that's come about in the last few years. There probably were games like this previously, but the last few years they're very, very popular. There are games that are called cooperative games that literally the entire point of the game is it's you against the board. The one that comes right to the top of my mind, the one that I really love, is called Pandemic, where you're a group of researchers trying to eradicate these diseases on the Earth before they cause an out-of-control pandemic that you can't stop. And it's very, very hard. You lose as often as you win. But what do you think of the idea of cooperative board gaming? I mean, do you think that's a reaction to that?
I don't know. I mean, it could be, but I mean, it's still. I mean, it's at the same time that dichotomy has been around forever. Not just in tabletop. You have your competitive gaming, and you have your cooperative gaming. You know, it's two different styles of gaming, but that kind of stuff has been around forever. You know, that's not really a new dichotomy. I think are you asking me, it's like, is the specific resurgence now a reaction to
that's what I'm wondering, because really, like I said, in the last few years, I'd say probably the last 10, you've seen an explosion in the number of games that are specifically either totally cooperative, where the entire group is playing
against the game,
or partially cooperative, where teams are formed in the middle of the game. Or
that's going to be more of a team building exercise, and it's obviously going to probably cause less clash between people because you're working together. I could see where that's something like some of these corporations do a lot of team building stuff, might have their people get together. It's quite possible. Of course, I mean, no thing is as simple as A causes B. It's such a complex thing, but that could be part of it, because I mean, gaming has become such a fierce cultural thing lately, because I mean the competition is so mainstream, it's such a big thing. So maybe that is the cooperative is a response to that, because I mean, it's out in everyone's face now. It's not just some geeks in the corner that nobody's paying attention to. It's everywhere now, and it is so ferocious.
There are entire YouTube channels. I mentioned earlier Tabletop with Will Wheaton, but there are other tabletop. There are other game channels that are literally nothing more than watching a group of people play a game. Tabletop is interesting because in many cases they're also sort of teaching you the game as they're playing. Yes. But
show is the reason I got the game Mice and Mystics. Yeah.
There are several Dungeons and Dragons podcasts that is literally nothing more than watching a group of people playing Dungeons and Dragons, and sort of the vicarious experience of watching that.
Well, that's like video gamers that watch playthroughs.
Yeah,
you know, because a friend of mine's kid, he was all half the time he was just watching like Fortnite, other people playing Fortnite on YouTube. You know,
my kid watches Minecraft videos all the time, but she actually learns things from watching him, because you know, she's like, oh hey, I didn't know I could do that. Now I'm going to go to my Minecraft world and do that. And I'm like, you do that. But that is something, I know we specifically said tabletop and board games, but I really think that in this this discussion, we need to mention the importance of video games.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh yeah, they're relevant.
They're related, definitely.
Now there's a whole other show on that by itself, but they definitely have their pertinence. Because really, you're talking about a difference in medium. The culture is very similar. You have the gatekeeping in gaming. You have and some of the like online where you're playing against people online. That is some seriously fucking vicious competitive shit.
And the
shit,
whole Gamergate thing, really, even though it touched into board games. And
it was more video game centered.
It was much more video game centric. Yeah.
Which, again, there's a lot of girl gamers out there.
A lot of girl game developers.
I would like to say
really
we love
incredible.
Each and every one of you beautiful ladies.
Brianna Wu, who is one of the ones that I follow a lot of her stuff. Brianna Wu was a really good game developer. She was really, tortured by these Gamergate people. She ran for Congress earlier last year. So
nice.
And she didn't make it, but I hope she runs again. Brianna Wu, if you're a listener, woot. But yeah.
It's just sad that that so many outsiders out there have become the oppressors themselves. Again, it's very Heathers. It's very Massacre at Central High. It's very human nature. It's like, well, sometimes the nice guy is only the nice guy because he doesn't have the power. Give him the power, maybe he'll be an asshole too. That's how you find out the true nature of someone's character, like you were saying.
Well, exactly. You know? And that's the thing is...
somebody win or lose, you'll find out what their character is.
You know, some of you regular listeners already know that I grew up in a really weird family doing a lot of historical reenactment, both Civil War, Middle Ages, Leif. Not Leif, a buddy of mine did the same thing, and
just call me Nicodemus, and I'll cut that.
Nicodemus actually used to do the same thing. Actually, I think he still does the Middle Ages reenactment, and so I grew up with people doing nothing but thriving in the nerd community before it was cool, and so. I mean, we did nothing but play games, and that's what brought a lot of us together was the playing of these different, ancient and or modern games, and I really feel like that is what could bring humanity together sometimes, is you just got to find the right board game.
Cards Against Humanity could be Cards for Humanity.
I think so.
I think, ironically, they would love that.
They seem like fairly nice people overall. They just got a huge Discordian streak, which I can totally get behind.
As a follower of both Eris and Bob, I can
Church of the Subgenius.
I can feel the slack emanating from them.
Feel the slack. Yep. Be filled with the slack.
I am filled with the slack, and I am avoiding the Stark Fist of Removal.
You know what? This is a show we should do. We should do a show on satirical religions.
Oh, because
there's actually enough of them to just have this
there
discussion.
There are several, yeah. I mean,
keep your ears tuned. We're going to do that soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think we're getting to a point where we can start talking about final thoughts. So we can do this. I'll tell you what, let's start with the least familiar with gaming, which would be Christoph. Do you have any final thoughts regarding this whole rigmarole?
Nothing profound, but I think it's interesting that gaming has become, like the games themselves have become so hyper-complex. I've even seen Phoebe's guy just beat his brain trying to learn a new game, and then they have these games with the giant box and figures and things you have to build and paint and insane strategy. Some of these games, it blows my mind. But that's a sign that gaming has really come into its own in our culture, that there's enough of a market and demand for it that people are willing to put this much money and time into creating the games. I mean, they're putting as much effort into tabletop stuff as they do into video games now, it seems like. So that's all I have on that.
And you pay about as much for a tabletop game as a video game, too.
Well, that's because what goes into it.
Yeah.
All right, and you can get infinite more use out of it because most games aren't single player. I mean,
when they're different every time, as opposed to a video game where you're playing. Well, it's depending on the video game.
Well, yeah, and that's what I want to say about games is it's taken me a while to really come to appreciate them. But over the years, I've really come to appreciate how games have brought so many different characters together. In my home and other places, I mean, we take them anywhere we go, and it's always been the most random, weird surprise when suddenly, we've got a couple hours somewhere and everybody's looking for something to do, and it's like, hey, You know, we've got this board game out back. What do you like to do? And it actually has been the cause for a lot of really good memories, just playing games with people. And I think that everybody in the world should at least give it a try a few times.
It's like Nicodemus said, is bonding.
It is. It's bonding. And it's very healing, I think, when you can, you know, sit around with people and just not focus on what's pissing you off about each other. Focus on what you're doing, you know, in the game. Especially cooperative games. Those are really good if you're pissed off at somebody. great way to heal a lot of wounds, I believe.
We started with the idea that I've played a lot of games. I just love that the culture is finally sort of embracing that. It's nice to be able to get together with a group of people that maybe, you know, you're all adults, you're all very busy. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why tabletop gaming has become so prevalent now is because, unlike a lot of other games, and I love role-playing games, but there's a lot more sort of overhead investment with a board game. You all just get together, you sit around a table, you pull the parts out, and you play the game.
Well, in a role-playing, you've got to be willing to commit to, like, getting together every week for who knows how long during
exactly.
the adventure, too.
It's a lot more of a commitment. And so my friends who have kids or who have, you know, busy lives or have to travel a lot, we all get together whenever we can. We sit down. It's almost and this is going to sound very weird, it's almost like the same role that church plays. It's fellowship. It is getting together with people that you
nerd church.
Getting together with people that you love and care about and enjoying each other's company. And I think we should do that more. And maybe if we did that more, we would have less of the other crap that we sometimes have to talk about.
You can even bring your own crackers and wine to game night if you want. But nobody has to get touched inappropriately. That's the best part.
Well, I think on that, I want to say thank you, everybody.
Good night, Gracie.
You stay classy, San Diego.
Take it easy, y'all. We'll see you next time on Wait, What Are We Talking About?